At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Professor David Meltzer, who is generously speaking of his article with his colleague Eski Willerslev in Nature magazine. New information about the peopling of the Americas as inferred from ancient genomics. There are many questions to be answered, and that's the joy of this article, asking all these questions. We now have the ancestral Native Americans in North America sometime around 15,000 years ago, 15 to 13,000 years ago, when the ice sheet is still in place, but there may or may not be a corridor. There is, of course, the Pacific coast to come down. There is a division between the northern North Americans and the southern North Americans, which I read, David, is equidistant from the ancient Beringia. And here comes some contradictory questions. Were the ancient Native Americans here before the ancient Beringia? Those are two different groups. What do we know, David?
Well, this is a really interesting matter that we're still sort of trying to get our heads around. So let's briefly return to Northeast Asia. We have our basal Native American groups emerging. At some point after that, we have a group that sort of spins off, and they will ultimately become what we've referred to as ancient Beringians. The ancient Beringians and the ancestral Native Americans, they're both Native Americans. They both make it across the land bridge. They both make it into Alaska, but they don't necessarily come at the same time. And by the time they arrive at different times, they're pretty distinctive from one another. Again, they're still Native American, but our suspicion and what we report in this review essay in Nature is that we think that the ancestral Native Americans got here first. They were the first population to sort of peel off and head east into Alaska and then ultimately down into the lower 48, whereas the ancient Beringians will spend a bit more time in Northeast Asia and then come across. Once that happens, the ancient Beringians basically stay in Alaska. The last sort of evidence that we have of them dates to around 9,000 years ago. An ancient individual found in a site called Trail Creek Cave in Alaska dates to around 9,000 years ago. That individual is an ancient Beringian. But after that, we sort of lose sight of them in the genomic record. This is a population that does not appear to be represented among present-day groups. Ancestral Native Americans, by way of contrast, do make it south of the ice sheets. They make it into the lower 48. Ultimately, they will make it all the way to Tierra del Fuego. This is the population that will be ancestral to the Native American groups who will be here when Europeans finally arrive after around 1000 A.D., what happens when they come south is really quite interesting. They come down the Pacific coast, as we suggest in our review essay, and then they split into two basal groups, a northern Native American group and a southern Native American group. As the name implies, the northern Native American group tends to stick around in the far northern portion of North America, in Canada. The southern Native Americans are actually found in portions of North America, but the southern Native Americans are the ones whose descendants will continue on south, and they will continue on south at what proves to be a remarkably rapid rate of dispersal, which is kind of interesting when you think about it, because coming into a completely unknown landscape, they must have looked around at some point and realized that they hadn't seen another human being for weeks, months, even longer. There was no fresh killed animals. There was no smoke on the horizon. Fresh killed animals, evidence of other hunters. And so they were traveling into this completely unknown, unfamiliar land But they did so with remarkable speed. They were really radiating out across the hemisphere. And as they're radiating down through Central America and into South America, groups are sort of peeling off, splitting off, and ultimately becoming somewhat isolated from one another. And so what happens over time is that you have this really rich and complex tapestry of different groups who will emerge over time by virtue of, you know, having become isolated from one another. But then in later times, as populations increase and groups become more mobile and start moving around the landscape back and forth, you have admixture between them. So the population history of the Americas is incredibly complicated. We're really only sort of tapping the surface of it and seeing at this point just the really broad patterns that mark their history.
The joy in your piece for me was when I discovered that dogs can tell us a story, that humans will come with dogs. Dogs won't come without humans. So if we track the genes of dogs, we know when the humans were here and where they were going. It's a joy. It's a joy. Now that I look at the dogs around me, I think, way to go, guys. You're like detectives. What is there any surprise from the domesticated dogs and the gatherings of these isolated small groups?
Right. So there's a story behind that, which is that a few years ago, I was visiting colleagues in Oxford University in the UK and giving a series of talks. And my colleagues are experts in the domestication and population history of dogs. And they were telling me about their latest findings about when dog lineages split from one another and when they had Siberian dogs and when they had American dogs. And I was listening to them and I was thinking, wait a minute. Your split times of when dogs are staying and when dogs are going kind of look like our split times of when people are staying and people are going. And that was, you know, that was sort of the aha moment where, well, of course, dogs aren't going to come wandering into the Americas by themselves. They're going to come with people. Now, people could have come without dogs, which means that we can't necessarily use dogs as a direct barometer of when people traveled. But certainly we can look at when dogs traveled and know that people must have been moving at the same time. So what this is telling us is that dogs were probably part of the cultural repertoire. Dogs were probably an aid to moving out rapidly across that unknown landscape, right? We were talking about the sort of challenges of colonizing a completely people-free landscape about which you know very little. It's not such a bad thing to have your dogs with you as defense, as animals that could help you with the hunt, even... Well, if times got tough, people eat dogs.
The Southern Native Americans, the SNA, spreads through the lower 48 and into Central America and all the way to Tierra del Fuego. A detail here of what wasn't found in the genomic search. These are my notes, David, so correct me if I get it wrong. No Ainu or Polynesian in the genome. No European in the genome at this date. Did I say that correctly, Professor?
You did. And let me give you the backstory there, because the backstory is, well, controversial. So there have been two threads, themes, sort of running through the whole discussion of the peopling of the Americas. One is the very speculative and highly controversial claim, based principally on archaeological evidence, that the first Americans were actually Europeans, that they somehow made their way across the North Atlantic during the Pleistocene, thereby successfully traversing a route that the Titanic couldn't manage in 1912, and that they colonized the Americas from Spain and France. The evidence, archaeological, is very, very thin, so it did not get a lot of adherence in the archaeology. And the genomics basically put a nail in what was left of that hypothesis by showing that there's absolutely no evidence, no genomic evidence whatsoever, that ancestral Native Americans were French or European or Spanish or whatever. Very, very distinctive genetic signatures, genomic signatures. So that was the first piece. The second piece is that there are, in the ancient skeletal record, that is to say the physical remains of ancient indigenous groups in the Americas, there is a small sort of subgroup with very distinctive kind-shaped crania. skulls. And much ado has been made of these very distinctive cranial forms, skull forms, suggesting that, well, they're not Native American, just based on the shape of their head and size and shape of their head. I never put a lot of stock in that simply because we know that skull morphology can be fairly plastic. And just because your head shape doesn't look like my head shape doesn't mean we're unrelated. And so one of the things that's also come out of the genomic records is it's shown quite clearly that even though we have these this sort of small sample of individuals who have these very distinctive crania, they're 100% Native American. There's nothing about them to suggest that they come from, well, as you mentioned, the Ainu, other groups who might live in areas other than sort of Northeast Asia. No, everybody in the Americas to date is descended from that initial population. With one caveat, which is to say, later in the Holocene, that is to say, after the end of the Ice Age, we do have subsequent movements into the Americas, but they're still not coming from Europe, and they're still not coming from northern Japan.
Yes, and I want to speak now, not we've gotten to the Holocene, which, David, I have to say, your article made me feel like the Holocene was too recent. I wanted to go back to 15,000 years ago. It's wonderful to speculate that Beringia date. But when we come back, your piece concludes with thoughts about patterns and what explains how people, why people moved, what explains how they got isolated, and what do we learn from this about climate, about weather. David Meltzer is a professor at SMU. His new book is about the material we're discussing in great detail. We've gone as fast as we can because there are limits to a conversation without you actually seeing the material in the charts. And the piece in Nature magazine has some wonderful illustrations. So you can see the caves and the sites where the DNA has been drawn and the motion, the questions about the northern Native Americans and the southern Native Americans. But when we come back, what are the patterns? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.